The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. We are here. It's Monday morning. We are 12 days away from Week 0, Florida and Miami, and just a few more from the unfurling of the true Week 1 opening kickoff to the college football season. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. Barton, we had one of those like great sort of weekends where you've got a lot of weekend practices. You're getting in some of your first scrimmages. We've got some bad news on the injury front for several major programs that we're going to get to by the end of this. We've also getting some good nuggets. You have emerged from just a full research deep dive. I mean, you did, you probably tapped into that Ivy League education and damn near pulled an all-nighter to get your notes ready for today's show. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, it was quite the throwback evening. My wife woke up at midnight, couldn't find me, walked out and saw I was still just like tapping away at the keyboard. And she was like kind of weirded out and went back to bed. But I kind of got in a zone. I felt like all these coaches and players are in the camp grind. I had no excuse but to dive in on the camp grind myself. And so I tried to just scour primarily the 24/7 sports network, and where it was out there, other newspapers or team coverage, and just sort of get a feel for as many schools as I could in camp, and sort of especially coming off the spring, weekend scrimmages and all that sort of stuff. I wanted to make sure I had a sort of a sense on where teams were at, and I feel like I got a little better.
We can start off. Why don't we just give it a little Camp Buzz jingle? But I mean, really, this is buzzing from all over the place. It's really a Camp Buzz episode.
This is kind of a Camp Buzz overview.
Okay, yeah. We'll start it off with the jingle just for all the day ones out there.
Players that are making a buzz. Camp, camp buzz. Camp, camp buzz. Camp, camp buzz. Talking about players that are buzzing.
I love the Cover 3, everything associated with it. But that was a really hard-hitting intro song we used to be holding down.
Yeah, man, that was in the early days of Cover 3. You know, when you were young and creative, and now the jingles, we got to find some new jingles.
Well, hey, they'll come yeah. Naturally. You know, we've got lock fight sounders. I mean, once we get into the locks battles, we'll break out Queen Latifah. We'll have stuff for them.
Before we get into the true, I don't know if this qualifies as Camp Buzz, but as we are getting ready for this, this pod, just right before we kicked off here, I come to find out that, Chip, you have not been following the Mike Locksley, Josh Gattis beef.
This is what I know. I know that they were both on the Alabama staff last year, and I know that they both chose to take their talents elsewhere. Mike Locksley was probably an exit that Nick Saban was prepared for. Josh Gattis was maybe not an exit that Nick Saban was prepared for, as the way that, Jim Harbaugh kind of, I wouldn't say ambushed, but he certainly swooped in and made Gattis an offer that he decided to take. So I know they've spent some time together in the same proximity, and you know they're both now in the Big Ten East together. So fill me in on the beef.
This is good, man. This is good stuff. All right.
This is spicy beef. This is a spicy beef sandwich. All right.
So the backstory is you hit on it partially, but also keep in mind that Gattis had basically accepted, like there was reports that he was going to be the next offensive coordinator at Maryland. Like it appears that he had sort of verbally accepted that job. But going to Maryland, Loxley's still probably going to call the plays. Between the time that he accepted and signed or showed up or whatever, Harbaugh swoops in, makes him the offer, says, you got full control of the offense, you're calling the plays, let's do it. No interview necessary. And so that's hard, easy to understand that he jumps on that and accepts it. All right, so that's the setting, all right? Loxley was asked in camp about if there was a moment at Alabama when Gattis really impressed him. And he says, the quote was, "I was impressed with all of our assistants before listing the Crimson Tide's entire offensive staff." And then he said, "I never thought that Josh was going with me. He was a guy that I was considering. I was happy he was given the opportunity that he was given at Michigan." So like double jab, like, you know, he was one of the guys on the staff that was good, and B, I never even offered him the dang job, right?
Right.
So like there's the initial punch, okay? Then fast forward a couple days, and here's the Gattis quotes. When asked about, I guess, it was a general, what do you think about what Mike Loxley said, maybe. He said, "I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike Loxley. He called every play. There are never any comments about that. I'm 100% confident I can, too, call plays, too. Mike Loxley can say I watched him call every play, but ask him where the game plans usually came from."
Woo!
So I'm fine with that. He did call every play. And I've got a notebook upstairs with all the game plans written down in them, but I've got tremendous respect for him, obviously. Then he goes on, "One of the things that's important when you talk about play calling in games, your call sheet is one Monday through Friday. What the players called Saturday, what the plays are called Saturday is about putting your kids in position to be successful. There have been coordinators for 20 years that aren't successful. It's because they're not putting their kids in position to be successful. You win the game Monday through Friday. That's something I took tremendous amount of pride in over the years, making sure I'm a big part of the game plan across the places I've been. Also, just because I haven't called plays before, I've recommended a lot of plays during the games. That's what it comes down to." All right. There's the clap back. Now, most recently, this was maybe Friday, Saturday, I think maybe Friday. Here's the last bullet point we got in this fight. And Loxley, this is Mike Loxley again, okay? He says, "I don't care to comment on it, but I am because I'd like to put this to bed. Here's what I say. I've been a first-time play caller before. Back in 2005 in Illinois, I was the first time I had a chance to call plays, so I know the anxiety that comes along with it. Josh knows the truth. That's really important to understand. I also know there's a difference between suggestions and decisions. He'll have an opportunity to make decisions now. He's got a job to do. I've got a job to do here. I want to talk about the coordinator, my coordinator, the guys I have in my program, which I feel really good about. I'm sure that notebook he has upstairs has a lot of suggestions in them. Hopefully he utilizes them in the right way and makes good decisions like I did for Alabama."
He rooked him. he said, "Step up, young blood. I've been doing this since 2005.
And, I mean, he patted him on the head.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
Tapped him on the butt and said, "Head on." I mean, there's a lot. That's some good beef right there, huh?
That is well-seasoned beef. He sits there. I love the suggestions, decisions, and the fact that he came back to suggestions and decisions.
Like they're parsing each other's quotes regularly. Like you can tell, like they're not just, "Oh, he said something? Well, here's what I think." They're like digging in and reading between the lines. And I mean, there's some serious, all of a sudden, like, add another cover three, like low key cover three game of the week to our slate when Maryland plays Michigan.
Dude, it is like that. That is so much. That is so much fun because I'm hearing those quotes, and I do not think that either coach is doing a good job of compartmentalizing and blocking out the clutter. Like, they are occupying space in each other's minds that really does need to be devoted to fall camp right now, but they can't help it because the beef is too spicy.
I'll tell you this, man. For better or worse about Gattis, he will he'll get out on Twitter, and he's already had like one beef this offseason. The new Penn State receivers coach sometimes these coaches will tweet out video and like coaching points and stuff from practice or something. And the new Penn State receivers coach tweeted out a video and some practice points, and it was sort of some of the same terminology that Gattis uses, apparently. And so Gattis on Twitter called him out and was like, you know, basically you're stealing my stuff. And I guess they got on the phone behind the scenes and come to find out that they were both sort of mentored by the same coordinator and John Shoup. And so Gattis sort of tweeted out that we good. But Gattis isn't scared to get out there and just sort of he has got a little edge. He's got a little edge to him. He's got a little chip on his shoulder. So I don't know whether Michigan fans think that's a good thing, a bad thing, indifferent, but this is going to be entertaining at least.
So another wrinkle to this that I think should be noted, we are getting coaches who have been like famously muzzled. Under the Nick Saban reign.
That's true.
Like they have been silenced as all Alabama assistant coaches are. You only get Nick. Like, I think you get maybe like one crack at him real early, and then in the postseason, the college football playoff has a bunch of mandated appearances where the coordinators get out there. But for the most part, Alabama assistants are silenced. And so now they've both got all this. It's like, woo! I haven't gotten a chance to, you know, talk to the media this much around a fall camp. This is fun. This is real fun.
Yeah. And it is interesting to me. This is like, you know, say what you will about Gattis's comment, but it appears that Loxley took the first shot here. And so, I guess he got a little, feathers in a ruffle because I guess Gattis didn't go with him to Maryland. But that's a great point is, unleash these guys. It's so funny to find out you sort of assume these guys are just these worker bees whenever they're with Saban, and then pretty regularly, like, they get out from under him and you're like, well, how did that personality even survive in that office with, whether it's Kiffin or, I feel like there's been a bunch of guys coming through there that are these big personalities that they just sort of under Saban, they're just, you never hear from them.
Well, we never hear from them. It's clear that there must have been some discussions Monday through Friday as they were trying to win the game and make some suggestions and decisions along the way. All right. Well, how about this? As we sort of lean this into some camp buzz, do you think that Mike Loxley being a little bit maybe being a little bit on edge has to do with losing the super talented Deshaun Jones to an ACL injury?
Yeah, there's been some injuries around the country, and that's one of them that's pretty important. Right now, just the sort of spring scrimmage buzz was like Javon Leak and Anthony McFarland at running back are just like absolutely dudes. But your boy Josh Jackson still hadn't won the quarterback job.
Mm.
Their best receiver was potentially Deshaun Jones, and he's out for the season. There seems to be some reluctance to get excited about anything else outside of the running back core. So, you know, I don't know. This could be this is a little worrisome for what's going on at Maryland right now.
Well, tell me what you – I think Jashawn Jones is one of those players where he's a sophomore, right? Flashed last year as a freshman, just sort of like freak, can do everything type player. And Maryland is not going to have a whole – you know, a handful or two handfuls of players that could go, you know, pretty much anywhere else in the Big Ten and be out there as a starter. And I viewed his athleticism and his ability, his game-breaking ability, to make Jashawn Jones one of those handfuls of players on Maryland's roster who, if he showed up almost anywhere else in the Big Ten, he'd be stepping right in. Like, he is top-tier Big Ten, you know, Big Ten-type talent. And certainly with that ability to be able to have that kind of impact. And so that's why it felt like a big loss, because Maryland just doesn't have a lot of players that are on Jashawn Jones' level.
No, I mean, they're going to need playmakers and everything. Get them. And especially, I mean, that's just such a brutal division right now. And not only that, but it's a division that's really – it's not just like in the West, you could argue, is like a really good division, like well coached, you know, that it's trending up. But the East is really talented. Like, all the teams are really talented. Yeah, you got to compete with Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan, who are these, like, and even Michigan State. Like, Michigan State would be one of the more talented teams in the West. And so. You got to have some horses. You got to have some dudes to go and make some plays against these teams. So, that's a little bit concerning for Maryland.
Well, let's keep it there in the Big Ten, and let's head on over to the Big Ten West. Where's your head at right now when it comes to Jeff Brohm and this Purdue team?
Okay, so yeah, good. I'm glad you asked. I'm losing. I'm a little worried right now on Purdue. The scrimmage, there wasn't really positive reviews coming out of the scrimmage. Sounds like the defense won the scrimmage. And as a guy that played defense in college for an offensive minded coach, anytime the defense has a better practice than the offense, that means that the team had a bad practice. If the offense had killed the defense, you know, then you come away and, man, you guys are really working hard. You know, take the night off. Y'all killed it. It's like, well, we got our ass kicked, but you're an offensive coach, so you're going to – you know, that's kind of the way it sounded to me, is like defense kind of kicked the offense's ass a little bit, and so Jeff Brohm wasn't happy with it. And that's – I guess that's a positive in terms of development on the defensive side of the ball, but I don't know, man. I'm a little worried if Purdue's got to lean on their defense this year.
Purdue is not going to be able to win 7-8 games if they're leaning on their defense. It's that is a group that has not – I've not found Purdue's defense to be extremely elite in any – by any measures, right? Like, it's not a group that you've circled and be like, watch out, man, this Purdue defense, it's going to lead the Boilermakers right to the top of the Big Ten West standings. Like, the book and the conversation is so much to do with that same offense that Jeff Brohm, you know, led to high a lot of success at Western Kentucky. It's the same offense that has, you know, put Purdue in a great spot. It's highlighted the playmaking ability of Rondale Moore and others. Like, that's the uneasiness feeling, I will say, I'm willing to dismiss, but I feel like we should definitely put a little tracker on Purdue. Like, we just need to sort of keep our eye on that, because the entire Big Ten West, it is a Thunderdome elimination challenge where I'm going to wait to see who starts taking steps back first. Because as we sit right now, we're still looking at six teams that could win the division.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, Elijah Sindelar is supposed to be the starter. And I mean, he lost out that job to David Blau last year. Rondale Moore, everyone in the country is preparing for Rondale Moore. Is there going to be enough on the offensive line? Is there going to be enough around Rondale. I mean, I will say apparently the Milton Wright kid, a true freshman, is balling out at receiver. But there's just a lot of guys that need to like step up on that side of the ball. And defensively, there's encouraging signs. But like to me, this is starting to trend towards a year where Purdue, gets their defense better. Offense takes a big step back. Gear, 2020 is sort of the next bet on Purdue season to me.
What about, do you feel yourself getting more confident in Iowa?
So, I mean, I think the AJ Epenesa buzz continues to grow. If you're a left tackle or whatever, right tackle, I don't know, in the Big Ten and Big Ten East, like you're going to get AJ or I guess not necessarily the Big Ten East, but the Big Ten. Just the Big Ten in general might have three top 10 defensive ends.
Chase Young.
At least three first rounders.
All right, Chase Young, AJ Epenesa, and who?
Yetur Gross-Matos at Penn State. That's not – like those are the three that jump to mind. But like Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan is going to be a stud. There may be someone else in there I'm missing. But I feel like those three – Epenesa, Chase Young, and Yetur Gross-Matos are first round guys. And Epenesa is just like the buzz is all about, the best case scenario, like all about what you would hope. So he's been legit. Oliver Martin, we'll see if he's eligible. The transfer from Michigan, who was a really highly regarded recruit, who would be, I think, a really good weapon for that offense if he can get eligible as a transfer, get his waiver approved. He made a few plays. So, I do find myself bullish on Iowa a little bit, though I'm also checking myself a little in terms of we always assume offensive line is goes without saying that Iowa's really good on that front. But, like, they weren't that – efficient running the football last year.
Sure.
And the interior of that unit is a little bit, needs some proving. So that's sort of the one question I have is like, can their offensive line get to a dominant place? I don't know. Like I have more confidence in Iowa than say Wisconsin right now.
Right. And so like that's the, as we're sliding around these little like stocks or magnets or, you were kind of moving them up, moving them down, trying to figure out who's going to have the bigger pieces of the success pie in that division. Like Wisconsin, we've got those kind of assumptions where it's like, oh yeah, no, they're always going to have, big old offensive linemen that are ready to go and ready to be dominant and ready to be really impactful. And Jonathan Taylor's still there, but like, what if anything happens to Jonathan Taylor? Is the entire offensive game plan, or is like most of the Wisconsin success plan for 2019 just assuming that you're going to be able to go back and run those same three plays over and over again, just like you were playing Madden or something?
What's the running back room look like? Yeah, you got maybe the best running back in the country, but what about the room? I mean, is how much, like, are you just going to give this guy the ball 35 times a game? Like, I guess Wisconsin's done that before and been okay, but I think I'm looking for how Wisconsin is going to spread this thing out between, distributing to their playmakers and who's going to do it. I mean, Jack Cohn, I guess, is trending as the starting quarterback over the true freshman Graham Mertz, which is okay. I mean, Graham Mertz, I kind of would have been a little bit surprised if Graham Mertz was just like knocking it out the box because he was a 4-star, but he wasn't like a 5-star. He wasn't top 100 guy to me. So, okay, Jack Cohn's looking like the starter, but Wisconsin is, that's another one where suddenly I'm like, I kind of talked myself into them initially, but I'm at this point, I'm backing off a little bit and getting back into like, let's make sure there's a reason to trust Paul Chris. Because when you really look at what he's done from a record standpoint, like, there was the 1 year, 2 years ago. Beyond that, like, what really has Paul Chris done as a head coach that makes you feel like you can just sort of bank on him to give you 10 wins, you know, contend for 10 wins every year. If anything, like that is the outlier at this point for him.
Because he's, all right, he's mostly 6-6, 7-5, 7-6 kind of range in his Pittsburgh time, right?
That's right. Yep.
And it was weird because the storyline as it was being sold was, yeah, we know what the record is, but not only is it him returning back to where he, you know, he played quarterback and was the offensive coordinator and all this, like you were leaning on the Wisconsin thing, but it was also being sold they didn't have much success, but his players really loved him. That was like in substitution for I know that they just, you know, went to a couple of Compass Bowls, but man, you listen to those Pitt players talk about him, like that's just a really good hire. And like that's awesome that you can create that kind of loving and like positive atmosphere, but it is going to leave out what you're looking for, which is hard evidence that suggests you are a top-tier Power 5 head coach.
Yeah, I don't want to undersell him and what he's done at Wisconsin. I mean, he's had three 10-plus win seasons to one 8-5 year. And so, and then he had, you know, six win seasons at Pitt. But I think part of what you have to add to the math here is the rising of the tide in the Big Ten West in general. Like this schedule is going to be a much more of a grind. Probably the biggest grind Wisconsin's had. Without going back and like digging into the schedules, like I would be surprised if Wisconsin in the last 4 years since Paul Chris has been there will have faced a schedule like the one they will face this year, given who they're playing in the East and given what the West is relative to what it's been. So as I started to really take off on the like Wisconsin is going to be this and another anonymous 10 win season train, I'm checking myself a little bit, making sure I'm crossing my T's here.
Coming up on the other side, getting into the latest buzz from around the ACC, the SEC, and more next.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them!
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
So let's go ahead and the rings thing. As we get ready to unpack both the ACC and the SEC, let's go with some Kelly Bryant. Let's look into this, because
how passionate are you on this subject, Chip? You got some venom coming on this, or where are you at, man?
As a human being, Chip Patterson does not care, not one bit. Like as somebody who is in the business of opinions and analysis and weighing in on it, I will say that it disappointed me how quickly this issue or non-issue became the latest. It's like it became the latest train to Outrageville, and anybody who either has their own agenda or enjoys fighting or yelling, it's like this was the latest thing to jump on, because, you know, we we had, it took a couple days before Kelly Bryant even, like, anybody asked Kelly.
So set the stage just to make sure anyone that hasn't been on sports, college football media, Twitter, knows what's going on here.
Dabo Swinney, it is revealed that, you know, Dabo Swinney did not, or Clemson did not send Kelly Bryant a national championship ring. You know, everybody got their championship rings from the 15-0 season, winning the college football playoff and the national championship, and they did not send one to Kelly Bryant. When asked about this at Clemson by, you know, local media, Dabo pretty, you know, bluntly said, listen, I love Kelly, but we won 11 games without him being here. If you want a ring, you got to be on the team. And that really, I mean, that got the morning debate shows going. That got two camps up in arms. Number one, there is a camp, and it is growing, that is just trying to chip away at Dabo. They believe
Feinbaum camp.
They really believe that, like, Dabo is being held up in a shinier light than what he quote unquote deserves. I don't agree with this take. I think he's judged pretty fairly and has been for a while. I believe if you still are buying into the aw shucks Dabo, then you haven't been watching that long, because he's proven that he's a little bit of a cold blooded killer here in the last couple years, in my opinion. But that to the side, the anti-Dabo crowd, they were fired up about this. The second is the crowd that is always looking to fight on behalf, whether they are asked to or not, of student athletes. And the way that things are weighted in college athletics, particularly college football, where the players are not being compensated and the coaches and the athletic directors and everyone else are very well compensated. So those two camps teamed up, jumped on the train to Outrageville, and no one asked Kelly whether or not he even wanted a ring. And we were just off with like 3 days of screaming. Was that a good summation of what happened?
That was well done. And that was I think it's a great call, you know, highlighting the, like, team student athletes who just can't resist, talking about how manipulated and unfortunate these poor student athletes are for, you know, in this big college football machine. The bottom line here is, if Dabo gave Kelly Bryant a ring because, hey, Kelly Bryant is the reason they beat Texas A&M, and Kelly Bryant, without Kelly Bryant, you know, who knows what the team looks like, but if Butterfly flaps his wing in China, then maybe they don't win a college football national championship in America. But ultimately, like, he quit the team.
Yeah.
And he did quit the team, like, it's okay that he quit the team. Good. I'm glad he quit the team. We're going to see another year of Kelly Bryant, but I'm not dogging Kelly Bryant. And neither is Dabo. And so if you wanted to give him a ring, that's cool. If you didn't want to give him a ring, that's cool too. They got to draw the line somewhere. I mean, you're going to give the ring to the long snapper that transfers week four too, because he gave you some good reps on scout team this week. So, yeah, man, like, we're talking about it, and it's been good talk fodder for everybody, but it definitely chalks up for me as a who wants to get mad today. Let's cape up for the poor kid who doesn't actually care anyways.
I mean, it probably starts with absolutely no malice, right? Like, it probably starts with, okay, it's time to order rings. Let's get our numbers together. And they probably send over the travel sheet from the college football playoff. You know, like, whatever the Excel database is that has all the players and everybody that was in the band and all the support staff, like, whatever they had that was, you know, making the trip to Dallas and then making the trip to San Jose, that's a very easy Excel spreadsheet to pull up and be like, all right, cool, will get rings to these people. Players, travel, all these staff, like, it's good. Like, I don't think that the conversation with Jostens or whoever the ring company is started off with, okay, and one last thing, do not, and I mean do not send a ring to Kelly Bryant.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. It just wasn't that malicious.
No. No. Yeah, it was I mean, Dabo, and it, what happened was it got on Twitter and people saw the quote, he quit the team, so he's not getting a ring. And people thought it was some shot across the bow, like, you hear me over there in Columbia, Missouri? You quit the team, man. And it's like, no, man, he just said, like, he did quit the team. He quit the team.
Yeah, and again, a couple days later, Kelly Bryant actually got to comment. He was like, no, I'm good.
Right.
Kelly Bryant, A, has a national championship ring, was a backup quarterback on the team that won it with Deshaun. Kelly Bryant has an ACC championship ring. Kelly Bryant was the MVP of the ACC championship game. Has a nice little MVP trophy. I will take it straight from Kelly Bryant's mouth. He's good. All right, what about Clemson? What's the buzz that's coming out from our friends there in the upstate?
So Joseph Ngata is a dude, a receiver. Like, get ready for another 6'4", 6'5". I think he may be 6'3" and a half, but he's a beast. He was in the All-American Bowl last year. I saw him up close and was like, looks the part, but he's one of these guys who it's like, as good as they've done at receiver, if a true freshman is jumping out and getting buzzed this early, man, he's going to be the truth. So get ready for the next big, you know, avatar catching footballs like 50 yards down the field. Cause he's going to get, it sounds like he's going to get on the field this year. And running back Mikey Dukes has been playing really well. It sounds like another true freshman, kind of add some depth behind Travis Etienne with, what's his name? The transfer to South Carolina. Tavian Feaster out. You know, they'll need some depth there. Mikey Dukes might be able to provide that. But, you know, aside from that, I think Clemson is kind of status quo. I think on the other side of the conference, man, I'm really fascinated with this Miami deal. This quarterback race.
Well, I mean, you are the, you know, Jaren Williams investor.
I did, yeah. And I did invest in Jaren Williams. But it doesn't seem like anyone has won this. And that's not good.
Talking about players that are buzzing.
Hey, quick note here. Yeah, this is as we are editing the podcast right now, a press release from Miami announcing that Jaren Williams, the redshirt freshman, has beaten out redshirt sophomores Nikosi Perry and Tate Martell. So as you hear this discussion unfold, do note that this decision has been made. And as we said, Jaren Williams, the safe pick of the trio, clearly that's where Miami's going to start the year. So quick note on that. And I guess for the Hurricanes, this is good news because now you've got something settled when it was a giant question mark with less than 2 weeks to play. So enjoy the rest of the show.
Talking about players that are buzzing.
That is not good. And to a lot of the college football public, whether they're, you know, just casual fans. I mean, I think the Miami fans are obviously like very aware, but I think the outside sort of is looking at this as either Tathan Martell or Nikosi Perry, and Jaren Williams is the mystery team. And that's why I'm actually kind of hoping that he wins it, so that when the year starts on August 24th, there's this like wide collection of the college football public that's like, Jaren Williams, who saw this coming?
Yeah. Like on the surface, he's almost the safer play to me. If I were to read between the lines, I mean, Tate Martell is athletic and has some moxie to him, but he's the biggest, you know, he's the highest regarded recruit from a profile standpoint. But
also he's going to hold on to the ball too long and take like 4 sacks a game.
Yeah, like there's some train wreck in there you can just sniff.
Right,
from,
yes.
You know, like you can sniff it from South Beach. And I think Nikosi Perry. I mean, it seems like there's been sort of some off-field stuff, maybe some leadership stuff. How quickly is he grasping things? You know, he probably is the most talented. And then Jaren is sort of this middle ground where he is talented, but is he the most talented? Maybe not. He is accurate, but is he the most accurate? Depends on the day. He is there's a little less personality wise. He's a little more between the lines, I would imagine. So I don't know. I have no reason to think he's going to win it or any. Like it's seriously, like at this point, for Miami to not have one of those guys start to emerge, it feels like it's just going to be another year of bad quarterback play.
I agree. And again, let us point out that the clock is ticking. We're 12 days away from the Miami Hurricanes starting their 2019 campaign.
Yeah, they're a week ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, we don't have a leader there. That's not going to be fun for Miami fans who have grown very, very tired of a very good defense trying to hold things together for a Hurricanes team that has just been woeful and at times inept on offense. On the defensive side, though, I mean, it looks like they're going to be nasty again. Like I've heard, seen, or not. I've not felt like there's any reason to think that we should take the best of what we've seen from 2017 and 2018 Miami on the defensive side and expect a continuation of that.
Yeah, and even on offense, there's playmakers there. Like even like KJ Osborne, the Buffalo transfer. It seems like every time I read a Miami update, that dude's had a touchdown or balled out in some regard. The Virginia Tech transfer, Trayvon Hill, had, I think, two sacks on Saturday in their scrimmage. So
Trayvon Hill is an NFL talent. Absolutely.
For sure.
And yeah, like that linebacking crew is just deep. Nah, it is. They can win the Coastal with that defense. They can't win the Coastal with three quarterbacks who are all trying to be the least worst option.
Right. Yeah. Like if the coastal is a division that has somebody emerge as an 11-1, even maybe a 10-2 type of season as the winner of the division, I feel like that's not going to be Miami. But if the winner of the division is 9-3, and in this sort of murky muck of a division where everyone kind of beats each other up a little bit, then I could see that being Miami based on that defense.
Let's jump on over to the SEC, to the Georgia Bulldogs, where the wide receiver position is a massive question. Do you feel like the Bulldogs in James Coley's offense, do you think they're starting to find a little bit of rhythm? Do we know what the rest of the offense around Jake Fromm is going to look like?
Well, Chip, have you spent much time on Twitter this weekend?
This weekend, no.
Okay. So you missed the viral highlight of George Pickens, the true freshman that they flipped from Auburn on signing day, making an insane one-handed, like, contested, I don't even know how to describe sort of the acrobatics involved in this catch. And everyone is sort of, I think rightfully so, like this was I think he was a composite five-star guy. Rightfully so, looking at it and being like, hey, y'all still think Georgia is going to be struggling a receiver this year?
Right.
Like, there is, I mean, between George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock, again, I don't know how quickly Dominic Blaylock can get ready. I don't know how quickly George Pickens can get ready. But those are two top 50 players in the country in the 2019 recruiting class. Dominic Blaylock is this really polished, strong, thick kid. Like, both these guys are very physically advanced. I am inclined not to count Georgia out, or like when I think I've used it as a bullet point in talking about Georgia. Hey, you know, they're going to be good, but are they going to, you know, win a national title? I don't know. Their receiving core doesn't have a lot returning, but
we can put that away. I think we really can. Absolutely.
You know, that it's, hey, you know, maybe who knows whether it'll be where it's going to stack up in the national or SEC pecking order, but like they're going to be all right at receiver.
We get hung up on something like that where it ignores the fact that there is a full wide receiver room, and because it's the University of Georgia, guess what? These guys are all pretty good. And the steps that it would take from someone to be a relative unknown to the analysts and the experts on the outside to being the number one go-to target, or, you know, one of the this incredibly productive receiving core, it's not that much.
And also think about this. I've talked about Georgia as this is like, as Alabama becomes new Alabama, Georgia is becoming old Alabama. And in the old Alabama, when the whatever it would be like 2007 through like 2014 or whatever, and they're always playing for national titles, how many times did Alabama, did we go into a season and be like, I don't know, man, that Alabama receiving core is really going to hold them back? None. They always had like one guy. They had one go-to guy and a bunch of other guys that were just okay. And that's not the recipe. That's not how, if this was Art Briles as the head coach of Georgia and the receivers, and they had no receivers, then yeah, maybe we can be concerned about it a little bit. But Riley Ridley went an entire career without having a 100-yard receiving game and was just fine as an outside threat. I mean, Javon Wims was their outside threat, and you know what, he had like 400 yards receiving or something a couple years ago. Like, it's just, it's okay. We'll be a receiver. Let's put that to rest. I think we're good there.
I'm not willing to put to rest that if you are suggesting that Georgia is not one of the, or will not finish, how about that? Georgia absolutely deserves to be, in my opinion, a top five team heading into the year. Everything that they've accomplished, what the roster is, the way that things are made up, top five team. Yes, absolutely. I'm in. You want to put them in your preseason playoff picks? I'm in. That's cool. I don't have a good argument against it. If you want to be making a bet that Georgia will not finish in the top five, I would look at the changeover on coordinators on both sides, if for only to point out that sometimes there can be a little bit of an adjustment. And when they've been winning at such a high level, those minor changes, if there is any ripple, if there is any impact from that, that could, with it, again, very, very small margin for error when it comes to Georgia against Florida, Georgia against Auburn, Georgia against Alabama, that maybe some of those changes, if the lines of communication, if the fit hasn't really settled, that changing over the coordinators concerns me way more than wide receivers.
I 100% agree with that. And that might be put to rest pretty quickly too. They might just come out the gates and look great. But I mean, especially as you start to hear the buzz out of Knoxville that Jim Chaney is this, you know, mad scientist and football genius, and you start to sort of realize how highly respected he is. And so then all of a sudden, you know, it's less of a knock on the current coordinators and more of a acknowledgement of, they just lost one of the better coordinators in college football, maybe, in Jim Chaney, and then, you know, a defensive coordinator that's got a head coaching job in the Pac-12. So that's hard to just backfill.
Right.
That'll be interesting. But I think across the board that the thing that is, because I heard, I saw an interview, I think it was Chris Lowe, maybe had a, you know, visited with Kirby Smart briefly, and Kirby was talking about the competition at practice. And I think that's the thing that is most, if you're betting on Georgia, and then you're betting on just trust it, that this is, they've recruited like maniacs, and now all these guys are just, you know, it's iron sharpening iron, and the competition at level in practice is elite. And Kirby Smart, I do have a lot of respect and trust in what he's going to bring in terms of the tone day in, day out from a competition level. And that's where you're like, you know, you just look at, I mean, how can they fail with all the talent they brought in and the way that they're going to be competing and the way they're practicing. So that, I think that's the positive outlook for Georgia.
What else stood out from across the SEC as you were doing your scour?
Well, I would, so, one, as we talk about Georgia and we talk about, so here, let me present this to you, Chip. me know what you think about this. If Georgia, when people talk about the SEC getting two or any conference getting two in the playoffs, the scenario is generally Georgia-Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you feel about the possibility of Alabama-LSU being the two from the SEC?
I'd be fine with that.
Alabama beats LSU, beats Georgia. LSU goes 11-1 with one loss to Bama and gets in. Because I think that's not a hard scenario to envision.
Well, I mean, it's hard to accomplish. It's not hard,
it's hard to accomplish. It's not hard to envision.
Yeah, right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's an LSU schedule that also includes what, you know, Florida, Auburn, Texas A&M, no big in Texas. But right. Yes,
that's the point. Would have beaten Texas.
Yes.
And if Texas is still really good, then because of a court, I mean, yes, like it's hard to get in the playoffs. But if they have a route because of that game against Texas and all the other, you know,
no one else play a schedule like us, Reese.
Yeah, dude. Hey, I'm here for it. Just if only to get on conference championship Saturday. Remember, like when Alabama wasn't playing in the SEC championship game in 2017, and so Nick Saban was like, "All right, I'm just gonna go do College Game Day," and just went up there and basically got to campaign for 2 hours for his 11-1 Alabama team to make the playoff.
That's right. Yes.
Oh yeah. Man.
So the other West team I think I mentioned is Auburn. One thing I think it looks like Bo Nix is starting to win that job at quarterback, but it seems like they're both going to play because Joey Gatewood is just this, he's just this like freak athlete at the quarterback position. And then I thought it was interesting. It sounds like Owen Popo is running with the ones at linebacker, another 5-star guy. So Auburn is going to be, I hope Oregon's ready for that game. Because they, you know, Auburn's going to be athletic.
The things can reverse for your boy so quickly if Oregon comes out and like jumps out to a 17-0 first half lead.
Do you feel better or worse about your Auburn sort of optimism? Knowing that Bo Nix is winning the job, or would you rather be hearing that Joey Gatewood is winning the job?
Does not really matter to me because I do think both will play no matter what.
Okay. Your calculations sort of doesn't matter who wins the job.
Right. My calculations are on what I would consider much more reliable entities, which is the defense, particularly the defensive front, and Gus with some heat on his seat.
Yeah.
That you're giving him, like, he's speaking real confidently. He might feel like this offensive line, and our colleague Barrett Salee does like a pretty, his big Auburn offensive talking point and his counter to my optimism has been, they do return all the starters on the offensive line, but the offensive line really got embarrassed at times last year. And so there's like, if Gus is confident, I would think that means that offensive line has taken some steps into getting a little bit better, a little bit more consistent, having a little bit more cohesion. And that, you know, with an offense that's going to be playing at tempo, with an offense that's going to be dealing with a lot of option and misdirection, having that group together. I mean, when Kerryon Johnson was carrying them all the way to an SEC West title, I think that a lot of that started with their play up front. That is probably my biggest X factor and the place where I am the most concerned in terms of, Auburn and my big 10-win bet is not at the quarterback position. It is right in front of him at the offensive line.
Yeah, but and the counter that I would have to the Barrett point is that it still felt to me that the identity of this team will be clearer, and that will help this offensive line. I think the pace of play, the more commitment to the run game, and general and sort of having a quarterback that can operate the way that Gus Malzahn wants to operate, I think that unlocks some things for the offensive line to where it's not they're not going to be as bad as they were last year. I mean, even you know, they shouldn't be anyways because all those guys come back and they'll be better. But I also just think that just from an identity standpoint, I can see this offensive line being much improved based on style of play.
I like it.
I do want to touch on Tennessee too.
Okay, let's touch on Tennessee
before we get out of the SEC because Emmett Gooden is hurt, out for the season. One of the most important players for Tennessee, which is a huge loss. But in returning, they get – but, like, I looked up and running with the ones is Aubrey Solomon right now, who's awaiting a waiver request, I think. But he's a former five-star. And then Daryl Middleton, who's, like, 6'7", 315. He's like a Raekwon Davis-looking guy. And now he might not be there yet, but, I mean, he's – like, Tennessee will look different this year. They will look better physically. And so that's pretty impressive in a way to think about. I mean, it hurts. It's huge. They lose Emmett Gooden. That's a big loss. But it is say something about who's stepping up in his place. And then you got a guy like Elijah Gooden, who's this 350-pound, just cinder block hands guy who's a beast as a true freshman. So that was interesting. And then as good as those true freshman corners were last year, Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor, it sounds like Warren Burrell might beat maybe Alante Taylor out as a starting corner. Like that's encouraging when you're playing good players and then recruiting better players to beat them out. That's encouraging. Same can be said, Henry To'o, who was a borderline five-star guy in the 2019 class, looks like he's going to be a starter at linebacker. So like those things, I think the probably the most encouraging thing about the Tennessee deal right now is just that the 2019 class appears to be a hit. It appears to be exactly what they needed. And so I think the long road to progress has begun.
My little mental notepad has Alante Taylor as a little bit of a hothead on the field. Is that right?
Likes
a big hit, might draw a flag or two over a couple game stretch.
I don't know. I don't know if I remember that you may be right, but I don't know.
He definitely had one against Alabama, and the reaction from everyone else in the Tennessee press box at least gave the indication that this wasn't the first time
that
Alante had tried to make a big splash and maybe cost his team a couple yards.
Well,
Warren Burrell.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that, I kind of do remember that a little bit.
All right. Well, you wanna save the rest of the buzz for the rest of the week? We got a big week coming up. We got All America teams to talk about. War on football. There's stuff to do.
We didn't touch. We were going to touch on Alabama injuries. Josh McMillan, starting linebacker, out for the season. Trey Sanders, five-star running back, out for the season. Well, we can dig into what that means next time. But, man, you know, fortunes are already changing around the country right now. So we'll keep it rolling midweek and get a couple more pods in to dig in.
Of course. That's what you can count on here from us. You can follow him on Twitter @BartonSimmons. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Barton, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.